All right, I'm going to call the meeting to order. Please rise for the Pledge of Allegiance.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
That brings us to item three, roll call.
Mike Serpy.
Here.
Mike Polakoff.
Here.
John Steinbrick.
Here.
Dave Klimisch.
Here.
Chris Keckler.
Here.
Quorum being present. Item four, recognition. Item A is commendations for Fire and Rescue Department personnel. Chief.
Mr. President, members of the board, good evening. United Hospitals now, Frederick South, traditionally has had has basically recognized agencies across the county for successful resuscitations where the patient has actually walked out of the hospital. And tonight we have two such recognitions, one from September of 17th that unfortunately got overlooked. We're correcting that now. And another one from June of this year. So we have from Frederick South, we have Terry Harold, who's the director of both emergency departments. We have Jeff Flash, who is the EMS liaison. I mean, you also know Jeff Flash from a newly police and fire commission member. We also have Chris Ventura from Frederick South as staff. We also have Dr. Ben Feinzimmer here tonight, who is our Kenosha County medical director. He's also the medical director for the TEMS, or the Tactical EMS, which pairs up with the Kenosha County SWAT team, and he manages the medical direction for both the county and that TEMS team as well. So without any further ado, Terry, Dr. Feinzimmer.
Evening, Mr. President, board members. Thank you for the opportunity to speak and share two positive and notable incidents involving men and women of the Pleasant Prairie Fire and EMS Service. Citizens of this community depend upon the rescue personnel to deliver life-threatening treatment in times of highest danger and most peril. Those citizens should be quite reassured that their EMTs and paramedics are amongst the most capable, not only in this region, but across the state and country. I certainly don't want to sound hyperbolic, but I can say, having now worked in several communities and witnessing other pre-hospital medical services, that the members of the Pleasant Prairie EMS system are without question the most advanced, most efficient, and have the highest and soundest judgment. They're simply at the top of the chain when it comes to field-based medicine. Two of their patients were fortunate enough to be in this village when they suffered cardiac arrest. On September 10, 2017, a 67-year-old male called 911 because of chest pain. A history of heart attacks made it simple for him to know something was not right. Although awake on their arrival, the Prairie ambulance crew witnessed the patient stop breathing and lose their pulse. Quick recognition resulted in several defibrillations or shocks, CPR, and medication administration. He was transferred to Frederick South and ultimately to home after a successful hospital stay. For this fella, his family, and friends, there are more happy days, weeks, months, and years ahead. Had it not been for his paramedics, he would have lost those chances. On behalf of the Kenosha County EMS system in Frederick South, we commend the following personnel. Sure. The commendation describes, in this case for Lieutenant Adam Craig of Pleasant Prairie Fire and Rescue, responded with a crew to a report of a cardiac arrest on September 10, 2017. And whereas on arrival, the crew utilized the utmost in skill and judgment in a timely and decisive manner to intervene on behalf of the patient. And whereas the result of the crew's efforts was a successful resuscitation. Frederick South Hospital System hereby commends Lieutenant Paramedic Adam Craig for his excellence in the performance of his duties. Lieutenant Mike Passafaro. Mm-hmm. paramedic Alan Clougherty. Paramedic Zach Keller. And Paramedic Andrew Strofe. Our second event was more recent. On June 6, 2018, Pleasant Prairie Dispatch was contacted to help Gary Stone, a 78-year-old gentleman who was unresponsive. 911 operators assisted family in rendering care while emergency equipment and personnel were dispatched. Once again, swift recognition prompted defibrillation. Unique to this call, and in large part thanks to the support of this board, the crew was able to deploy the new Lucas device. This automated chest compressor computerizes CPR and frees up the ambulance crew to initiate other life-saving measures. It is safer for the patient and for the rescue personnel and just plain works. Gary was saved thanks to the care of the Prairie Fire Department personnel, and I understand has been to the firehouse since to graciously extend his appreciation. Gary's also in attendance this evening, so thank you for coming. For that and for all the other work they do, the following individuals deserve commendation. Sure. Gary, why don't you come up with us? Assistant Chief Dave Wilkinson. Lieutenant Joe Ozuski. Paramedic Dean Holloway. Paramedic Joy Mathine. Paramedic Parker Jones. And Firemedic Ron Weevil. Gary asked if he could have a few words, and I think certainly he's entitled.
I'm here tonight to thank these gentlemen for their fast action and for the job that they're called to do by God. I honestly believe that we all have a gift, and we should give it publicly to each and every one of our neighbors and our friends and our family and all those around. I thank God for all of them, and it's not very often that an individual has a occurrence to run into these fine people. But you go about your daily lives and never think of anything happening to you. But when it does, speed counts. And these fine people have rescued me and give me another chance at telling everybody how great they really are. And I praise them and I thank them. And I've watched them on TV, you know, how they do and what the firefighters do. And all of our public servants do not get enough recognition. and with all my whole heart, I love these guys and these ladies that has put their lives on the line and really want to get us to the hospital as fast as they can. They want to save lives, and I think life is well worth saving, and I think we ought to prove it by doing it by actions for our neighbors and our friends in our neighborhood. Thank you.
Oh, they moved. That's okay.
Jane. Did you do that?
Yeah.
Do you mean to do that?
Kind of like, you know, little halos around everything.
They're trying to put you in front of it.
I can't put it. I spent 2 hours. I thought, well, you know, the styling will just wear off, you know.
Okay. I've seen that, Lucas, in action. I'd like to see it. Not for me, but I'd like to see how it works. Your daughter's married to a fireman, isn't she? Which one is? Is she married to one of the guys back there? Something else? Control F5?
Well, it's the PowerPoint's not going on.
Is it back there?
Yeah, he's a tall one right in front of her now. He's walking out the door right now.
Right there? So her last name is Stroh. So how did she like living with her?
What?
The video boards are down. Yeah, we're taking.
Thank you.
Well, congratulations to all the firefighters. Great job. Taxpayers are definitely getting their money's worth here. So, and it's good that we're giving recognition and the public is to see the benefit of having such a trained and qualified group of individuals working for them. With that, we'll move on to item 5 minutes of the meeting.
I'll move approval.
Motion a second for approval of the minutes meeting for August 6, 2018. Further discussion? Hearing none, those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? So carries. Brings us to item 6, which is a public hearing. We have one on the agenda this evening, and that is item A, consider resolution 1827 for the discontinuance of a portion of 110th Street east of 116th Avenue South.
Well, we're experiencing a little technical difficulty
we
right
will
now.
Pause for a moment.
So we could just pause for
Mr.
a moment.
Mr. President, there are no public sign-ups this evening.
Oh, no, we're doing the public hearing first. I just needed the slides if I could get them up. I don't know how to get them up anymore.
Do it the old school.
I don't even have to explain. But I can explain. Okay, so the public hearing this evening is the consider resolution 18-27 for the discontinuance of a portion of 110th Street east of 116th Avenue South. And this is just to the east of Premium Outlets. On July 2nd, 2018, the Village Board had adopted resolution 1823, and this was to initiate, there we go, is to initiate the discontinuance of a portion of 110th Street east of 116th Avenue, south of parcels 19 and 20 of CSM 1699 within the Lakeview West area of the Lakeview Corporate Park, and this is pursuant to section 66.1003 of the Wisconsin statutes. A portion of 110th Street right-of-way is proposed to be vacated as shown and legally described in the attached request and as shown on the screen, that area that's in the bluish-purple color. The request was requested because the initial dedication was part of CSM 1699, and they're looking to vacate this land, and it'll go to the property owner to the north. All of the abutting and the adjacent property owners will receive notification, and in fact, they were a party to signing the application for the request. Although this right-of-way was dedicated, roadway improvements were not constructed and are not intended or required to be installed for future development. The land to the north and the south do not require this roadway, and the land to the east has an access via a single gravel driveway that's located outside of the 110th Street right-of-way. However, an easement for the future expansion of public sanitary sewer will need to be dedicated to the village on the western 20 feet of the right-of-way being dedicated so that we can get a force main south in 116th Avenue to the State Line 94 development to the south. Upon vacation of this portion of the 110th Street right-of-way, again, it'll be transferred and attached to parcels 19 and 20 of CSM 1699. It's identified as tax parcel numbers 924-122-0302-0161 and 302-0162. This is land that's owned by Breeze Terrace, LLC, for a future development we're going to be talking about this evening. It's a multifamily development. The board is holding the required public hearing this evening at the request of the petitioner. On July 18th, all required property owners were notified via regular mail, and the required Class 3 notice was published in the Kenosha News on July 30th, August 6th, and August 13, 2018, to notify them of the public hearing that's being held by the Village Board this evening. So with that, I would like to continue the public hearing.
This being a public hearing, I will open up to public comment or question. Do we have a sign-up list?
Mr. President, there are no sign-ups this evening.
Anybody wishing to speak on this item? Hearing none, I'll close the public hearing and open up board comment or question.
Just a question. Were there any responses from the mailings that were sent out to the abutting property owners?
No, there weren't. And in fact, the petitioner, Fran Brzezinski, actually went to each of the abutting landowners and asked them to send or submit letters of support for that vacation. So we've not received anything in the negative for this vacation.
Move approval of Resolution 1827.
Second.
Motion and a second for adoption of Resolution 1827.
Gene.
Further discussion?
Will that road get turned over, or what will it look like after it's done?
So actually the road is right-of-way on paper, so there's no road that was constructed, no sewer, no water, no gravel, nothing. And so what will happen is it will be attached or made part of the Pries Terrace development to the north. Okay. So in that particular area, I think we've got some landscaping and trees, and that's about it. And it's a little bit of wetland, I think.
Further comment or question? Hearing none, those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Opposed? So carries. Brings us to item 7, citizens' comments.
Mr. President, we do have one sign up this evening, William Vollmer.
And we're going to ask you, please give us your name and address for the record.
Sure. My name is William Vollmer, Bill Vollmer, and I'm at 9946 Cooper Road in Pleasant Prairie here. And I'm here this evening just to approach the board. I appreciate the chance to comment. I am actually representing the Village Green Heights Homeowners Association. I'm the volunteer treasurer, lucky me. And we have really run across an issue that we'd like to work with the village to try to resolve. We have certain covenants and bylaws, and one is not parking commercial vehicles or trailers on your property, which has not been an issue, but what's happening now is we have a couple of residents that have started to work around that, and they move their vehicles just onto the street in front of their house, which is not really in the spirit of the covenant and bylaw that everybody has agreed to abide by when they purchase the property. So unfortunately, I'm the one that's reduced to emailing our poor chief of police over here and saying, can you help us move a vehicle or get a trailer moved and whatnot, which I don't think is productive for either parties. So I'm here just to ask if there's a way to work with the village to try to craft an ordinance or work some way that in the boundaries of an HOA, if there's a way to harmonize perhaps an ordinance, understanding that any HOA could come along with crazy stuff. But I work with attorneys every day at work, and I'm sure that there's a way that there's to craft something that we could potentially work together so that it's not a game of cat and mouse or a shell game of on the property, off the property, move it up the street for a couple of hours or a couple of days. And we're the ones that take the phone calls from all the neighbors saying, hey, they're not abiding and whatnot. So just the first ask I don't know how to start or where to start, but if there's a way or someone that the village can point me to start to have a conversation and see what's possible, we'd really appreciate it.
I'm sorry. You said it was RV trailers and.
Right now there is a box trailer. There's a small trailer with no license plate on it that gets moved around all the time. We've been dealing with it since May.
Okay.
So it's not. We've obviously reviewed the parking ordinances, and quite frankly, it's within the village ordinance the way it's crafted right now.
But right.
So they're not breaking any laws as long as they move it within 48 hours, and that's exactly what's happening. So,
okay.
All right.
It's definitely something that we can look into. The staff member that you'd probably be working most closely with would be Gene Warby, our community development director. And so if we'll just get your contact information. We'll evaluate what we can do.
Great. Thanks very much. Appreciate the time.
Thank you. Anyone else wishing to speak under citizens' comments? Hearing none, I'll close citizens' comments. We'll move on to item 8, administrator's report.
President and members of the board, I thought that you would all be interested in a recent promotion that the league has presented regarding the dark store loopholes. They recently created a video, and so was hopeful to be able to present that to you this evening. As you'll recall, we recently participated in supporting this campaign, and this is one of the products of our support. And so you'll just wait while we get it set up.
If there are big box or other chain retailers in your community, your property taxes may be going up. That's because certain commercial properties have been able to obtain special tax reductions. Perhaps you've heard of these tax breaks. They're known as the dark store and Walgreens loopholes. Unless the state legislature closes these loopholes, other property owners, including homeowners, will pay an average of 8% more in property taxes. Even more in some communities. Communities like the town of Grand Chute, Ashwaubenon, Sheboygan, West Bend, Franklin, Pleasant Prairie, Sun Prairie, La Crosse, and Rice Lake. You see, the total amount of property taxes a local government may collect is strictly limited by state law. The size of the property tax pie stays pretty much the same from one year to the next. What can and does change is how the pie gets divided. When one kind of property, like big box stores, pays less, other kinds, like residential and mom-and-pop businesses, pay more. Let's take a closer look at the dark store loophole. Attorneys for big box chains claim that a brand new store in a busy area has the same value for tax purposes as a vacant, boarded-up, dark property located in an unpopular location. Here's an actual example. A Lowe's store in Wauwatosa is assessed for taxes at $13.6 million. Lowe's claims it's only worth $7.1 million. Yet Lowe's spent in excess of $16 million to acquire the land and build the structure. Lowe's argues that even the land was devalued from $9 million to $3 million once the big box store was constructed. And Lowe's insists its store can only be compared to vacant dark stores for property tax purposes. Ironically, as big box stores fight for a smaller share of property taxes, they use more municipal services. Big box stores demand more police, fire, and ambulance service than other commercial properties, and way more than residential properties. Every day, municipal police, fire, and ambulance respond to calls from big box stores. Meanwhile, the cost of paying for these services gets shifted to homeowners, the class of property using these services the least. The other loophole is called Walgreens after a 2008 Wisconsin Supreme Court decision. That ruling allows national pharmacies and other businesses who lease their store to claim the value of their properties, for tax purposes, is less than half of the actual sale price. Here's another real example. Walgreens challenged the city of Oshkosh's assessment of its store. The Court of Appeals, relying on the 2008 decision, decided that the value of the Walgreens property was $2.2 million, much less than the $4.3 million actual 2009 sale price of the property. Other taxpayers, mainly homeowners, now have to cover Walgreens' former share of the taxes. Plus, Oshkosh taxpayers had to pay the corporation a tax refund of $69,500. Nearly 300 pharmacies in Wisconsin can take advantage of this loophole, including stores in Ashland, Onalaska, Dodgeville, Beaver Dam, Weston, Appleton, and Sturgeon Bay, and in your neighborhood. Other commercial and manufacturing businesses that lease their space are also beginning to use this same loophole. Only the Wisconsin State Legislature can stop this unfair tax shift. Tell your state legislators to restore fairness and common sense to the property tax system by closing the dark store and Walgreens loopholes. Call your state legislator through the legislative hotline at 1-800-362-9472 or visit darkstoreloopholes.org.
So I thought that would be worthwhile presenting to you all tonight. I know that we're well aware of this issue, and it's been discussed quite extensively at our board meetings, but wanted to at least inform the board and also let them know that we've posted this on our social media pages and hope that we can continue to spread the word and assist this campaign to make sure that all Wisconsin residents are informed and understand the implications of these loopholes.
Nathan, did we put this on our Pleasant Prairie Channel 25? Could we do that?
We could.
We did?
I'll talk to
Ryan. Okay, good.
Good presentation. I'm not sure what the number is, but, you know, the village taxpayers, we've already lost some cases to an extent. So it's already happened where the residential taxpayers and small businesses have already assumed part of that shift in tax rolls, and it's just beginning. I think that's the key thing to realize is that, you know, it's just beginning, and the people who are monetarily convincing legislative leaders that to leave this thing as is and not act on it, they're not done with us. They'll keep going until they've achieved 100% of the shift that they want to shift to residential taxpayers. It's, you know, it's a pretty simple process. You find key people in a caucus on either party. I'm not singling out one, and you financially motivate them to keep that subject alive. And that's how this thing has been kind of going along for a good 6-7 years. And it's really reached a peak now where in some of these communities it's really having an impact. And Pleasant Prairie's ultimate impact is 17%. It's not 8%. So that'd be a significant increase on anybody else who can't take advantage of this loophole. Unless we decided to classify all the homes as dark stores and give everybody the same rate and raise the mill rate and the taxes be the same. But, you know, I think, you know, the money we've spent to have the league put this together is money well spent. And I think for a lot of people it makes it a lot more understandable. So
it's just unfortunate that we have to spend our money to fight the people that are supposed to represent us in taking care of stuff like this. And my gut feeling, Mike, is if the election stays with the same people in power after November that are in power today, I don't think anything's going to change. And I hope, I hope they come to a realization that they have to address this, and I hope they do. But I just have this gut feeling that big money is going to tell them, you leave it alone. And I hope that doesn't happen, but I think there's enough evidence in Madison that that's happening on a regular basis.
I agree.
Our representative has told us that they need to study the issue. The issue is very plain when you see it in black and white in the presentation the league has done. I know the league has a couple more coming out for social media, and they're good, and they explained it. But this one probably explains it the best. And, you know, once again, our representatives keep telling us they want to study it. But they're for it. And as I said before, it's easy to be for it if you don't have to take a vote. And right now, we don't need any of them in Madison. We just have to convince one person, Robin Voss, to bring this forward. So if you want to save money, just elect Robin Voss, and he'll take care of everything for you. One paycheck, one person. That's it.
So one thing just to share, though, is that, you know, share this video. That's a part of the campaign, is to make sure that the word gets out. Comment on it. You know, feel free to like the video. The more we can spread the word, I think the more opportunities there will be for individuals to contact the representatives, including Robin Voss.
Further comment or question? Hearing none, we'll thank you, Nathan, and we'll move on to item 9, new business. First item being item 8, consider and approve the development agreement between the Village of Pleasant Prairie and the Riverview Group, LLC, as it relates to the State Line 94 Corporate Park.
So before you this evening is a developer's agreement between the Village of Pleasant Prairie and River Group, LLC, for the State Line 94 Corporate Park. This property is owned by Riverview Group, LLC. The developer is officially Venture One. It comprises of approximately 308 acres. It's zoned M5, production manufacturing district. 100% of the developable property is in TID 7 and will be used for industrial and commercial use. And the general location, if you were to look at the map, is basically between 110th, which we just primarily vacated this evening, to 122nd Street to the south and east of the I-94 East Frontage Road. As I had indicated, the JRB approved TID 7 on May 15th of 2018 this year. The proposed project is a three-phase project of approximately five buildings. The TID type is Industrial Developer Pay-Go TID, so all costs will be paid for by the developer, and the village will issue developer revenue bonds, that will provide for payments to the developer to the extent that tax increment collections are available and the village board appropriates the funds. So you can see that there's a conceptual plan. These are the five buildings. There's building E, which is the first phase. The second phase would be building D and C, and the third phase is building A and B. Now, mind you that this is a conceptual plan, and so it is subject to change the configurations. Also, one thing to note is that within the developer's agreement, we gave quite a bit of flexibility so that they could begin with any single phase and go from phase one to phase two, or start with phase three to phase one. And so that will be kind of contingent on the developer's ability to secure individuals or tenants' industrial uses. The proposed project costs total over the three-phase period about $20 million. You can see those breakdowns. So phase one is roughly $10 million. Phase two is $3.6 million, and phase three is $6.3 million. Noting that phase one, if they're to do the project at the south, it would require them to extend significant infrastructure, sewer and water, all the way from the north to the south of the property. So improvements that are included are road improvements to 120th Avenue or the East Frontage Road, 122nd Street, which includes some additional turn lanes for acceleration and deceleration, 116th Ave, which is an extension southward, in a cul-de-sac off of 120th Street Ave and 116th Street. Sanitary sewer improvements will install a permanent sanitary lift station as well as a sanitary force main with some extended gravity flow sanitary sewer. Water improvements, they'll be installing a 16-inch water line along the East Frontage Road and along 122nd Street, and a 12-inch water line along 116th Ave, and fire hydrants will be included as well. There will also be stormwater improvements, grading, detention ponds, and there will also be street trees and street lighting. The next few slides kind of show the phasing, and I realize that it's small, but in case there are any questions, I figured it would be imprudent to have them available. With that, I know the developer is in the audience. If there are any questions, we'd welcome them to the stand.
Jeff, the same question I've asked for the last couple of years. Any interest coming to this park yet?
My name is Mark Good. I'm a principal with Venture One Real Estate. I've been working on this for a few years. We have it in the market with our brokers. We're constantly sending out responses to people that are inquiring in southeast Wisconsin. Until we have this plan approved, it's very difficult for us to respond to anybody. But we're hopeful that next spring we would be breaking ground. We've had inquiries, but we can't finalize anything without having this in place. So appreciate the question. We're hopeful that we'll do something next spring. Okay. Thank you.
Mike?
Before you go,
In your contracts for purchase or in the covenants, are you putting in a restriction on utilization of the Walgreens or dark store loophole on businesses that locate there?
It's industrial, so we don't have darks. I don't know what dark space relates to industrial. Maybe more in retail, wouldn't it?
Where well, industrial, the state is the one that actually does the assessing on it. They've been implementing it in as they've been valuing industrial properties. And if you have any a lease property, which, you know, last time I visited with you, you were looking at leases, that, you know, there has been people looking at, applying that Walgreens decision to commercial lease space or any kind of lease space. So, I mean, in a way, it doesn't affect the village because, you know, you're going to be holding notes, but we'd like to see you be able to succeed and retire the TID sooner than later.
Our personal goal is to get retired as fast as we can. So yeah. if there's some facility that allows us to do that, that works with you in the state, we're happy to do it. I'm not as familiar with that clause, but our goal, since we're putting up the money, is to get the bonds paid back as soon as possible and as quickly as possible and be aggressive to chase transactions and deals.
We might be able to supply you with some language that because that is one area where in a new development, the municipality can regulate the dark store because of a TIF district, but in the sense this is a developer district, you'd have to be the one to
pay it.
Well, you'd have to be the one to enforce it on the property.
We're happy to do that. Okay. I mean, what you're saying is that if it goes dark, that the taxes continue to be paid and
No. If they try to assess the value, they try to lower the value of the building to say, well, compare us to a dark store.
Yeah, and our lease is we would say that they would not have the ability to, lower protest
that's
the taxes.
That's
where we would do that. I do that in all my projects. Okay. I didn't know it was called that. I'm sorry.
Okay.
And we have TIFs and other incentive programs on them. Almost all of our properties, and we put in that are leases that they don't have the ability to protest taxes for that.
Okay.
So that and lower taxes, so that because we're putting in the equity and the money into the infrastructure.
Right.
Mike, I'd have to go back to the developers agreement, but I know that this topic has come up in the past, and I was pretty sure that we covered this issue within the developers agreement. But I can go back and verify too as well.
We're in agreement with that.
Okay.
We don't have any issue with it. I agree. I didn't know what it was called. We call it something different in our leases, but I'm pretty, as you say, Nathan, I think it's in there, and I'm comfortable we would be enforcing that.
Thank you.
No problem.
Any other questions?
My only other comment would just be that I know staff worked significantly with the developer on this agreement, and I believe that we've come to a good resolution. And even with the issue this evening that you brought up, Mike, I think that there would be consideration for that language. But I'm pretty sure it's covered.
I am also. Thank you.
But if we made a motion to approve the development agreement with the understanding to make sure that dark store verbiage is in the agreement.
Second.
We have a motion and a second. Any further discussion? Hearing none, those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Opposed? So carries. Gene, do you want B, C, and D taken together?
Yes, please.
Motion to take items B, C, and D together.
So moved.
Second.
Motion and a second. Those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion carries. Item B is to receive the Planning Commission recommendation and consider Ordinance 1835, comprehensive plan amendments as it relates to proposed Breeze Terrace Apartments, generally located south of Corporate Drive and east of 116th Avenue. All three items relate to each other. Item C is to receive the Planning Commission recommendation. Consider ordinances 1836, 1837 is for zoning map, zoning text amendments as it relates to Breeze Terrace Apartments, generally located south of Corporate Drive, east of 116th Avenue. And item D is to receive the Planning Commission recommendation and consider certified survey map, memorandum of understanding, digital security imaging system agreement, and DSIS Access easement for the proposed Breeze Terrace Apartments generally located south of Corporate Drive and east of 116th Avenue. Gene, you're going to cover them all, and we will take separate action on all of them.
Yes, please. And the comprehensive plan modification will require a roll call vote. So all three of the requests, the CVU, actually four requests, are at the request of Fran Brzezinski on behalf of Interstate Partners 2, WI LLC, which is also Breeze Terrace LLC. And this is for the Breeze Terrace apartment development. They are proposing three 33-unit buildings and six 19-unit buildings, or a total of 213 apartments. The three requests that they have include a comprehensive plan amendment, which is Ordinance 18-35, zoning map and text amendments, which are 18-36 and 18-37, and a certified survey map and a memorandum of understanding. There were some previous approvals that have been granted by the Village Plan Commission and the Village Board in final actions with ordinances. They include neighborhood plan amendments that were approved by the Village Board on May 7, 2018. And this was to actually lay out and design how the neighborhood in this area could work. There were two alternatives that were approved by the board, one that included their property as well as some vacant land to the north that could be residential. And then the second alternative was their property plus land to the north that could be commercial. A conceptual plan for the Breeze Terrace Apartments was also approved conditionally by the Village Board on May 7, 2018. And again, this development is on 16.75 acres. It does not include the land that you just vacated this evening, so that'll be added to that. And again, it showed us where the apartment buildings would be located, where the clubhouse would be, where the primary environmental corridor would be preserved, where floodplains and wetlands would be preserved on the site, and did a general layout and conceptually how the site would be serviced by municipal sewer and municipal water. This evening, the Village Board considered the vacation of the right-of-way, which is immediately to the south of this development, again, the 110th Street right-of-way. Since the land was dedicated for right-of-way and by the original property owners, Wiss Park LLC, the land is going back, in the 1990s, that land is going back to this particular development. The environmental features we had talked about on the property as part of the Plan Commission and the board meeting include a significant stand of woodlands that are in a primary environmental corridor, 100-year floodplain, and then there were four pocketed or isolated wetlands that were on the site, all of which are intended to be preserved and protected as shown on the slide. There was a tree survey that was completed. Again, there was some concern about how far that the development could encroach into the wooded area. Those areas that are identified with the red are the areas where trees are going to be removed, some isolated areas for the stormwater basin, which is at the southeast corner of the site, and then that very southwestern corner of the wooded area at the northeastern corner of the site. Those trees will be removed, and the rest of the trees on the site are intended to be preserved and protected. Certified survey map was presented by the developer that combines the properties. It dedicates easements. It dedicates additional right-of-way for 116th Avenue, and it also specifies specific restrictive covenants for the development. And that is also on the agenda tonight. The public and private improvements, the development is going to be serviced by municipal sanitary sewer, water, that are in 116th Avenue and will be extended into the site as private sewer and water. There'll also be private storm sewer and private on-site storm water retention facility, again, at that southeast corner that's going to service the site. An MOU, a Memorandum of Understanding, is going to be executed by the developer that outlines the timing of the public improvements. Again, things like the sidewalk, streetlights, some of the things that we had talked about that were going to be acquired in street trees as part of this development, with an anticipated roundabout reconstruction in this area, we are looking to defer some of those public improvements until such time as the roundabout work is completed, and then some of those improvements will go in at that time. As I mentioned, there's a roundabout that has been proposed at the intersection of Corporate Drive, 120th Avenue, and 108th Street, just to the north of this development. The cost associated with the new lift station that is going to be utilized to service this development in this area will be a part of the TID 5 improvement costs. The owner and the developer will be responsible for their fair share of the cost for the required roundabout improvements, And at this time, the estimated cost for the roadway improvements is about $177,000. The residential development plan that was presented to the Plan Commission and as part of our PUD is very detailed with respect to the building plans, parking lots, buildings, signage, lighting, trees, all the details of the site. There's also a deed restriction that was discussed by the Plan Commission that extends into the adjacent property, and that is so that there can be at least a 300-foot separation between where anyone is shooting or hunting and the closest building, which is his easternmost building on this particular site. As part of this discussion, there's an agricultural fence or a wildlife fence or deer fence that is being proposed in the primary environmental corridor area that will help define that area as well as prohibit any hunters or those that are coming from the east side of this property from coming into the development because of the fencing. These are the generalized elevations. There have been a few tweaks to these elevations, but these are the ones that we've been showing since the very beginning. There have been a few minor adjustments. As you can see in the very lower left-hand corner, there's some patio areas that are actually above the underground parking. They are going to leave those as patios. There's going to be landscaping and fencing around those patios. At this time, they're not sure if they're going to make some interconnections from the units to the patios, but there'll be a gate so that they'll be accessible.
Jean, what are the X's on those three buildings?
I think that that's just to identify where those three buildings are. Also, those are the three 33-unit buildings. So I think that that was my staff's way of identifying that those are the three 33s, and those are the ones with the patios, and those are the ones with underground parking. Okay. So as I'm shown on this slide, these are the 19-unit buildings, and I think we just wanted to identify for you that the three 33s are kind of separated, and so they're not all the same building. So these are the 19-unit buildings, 6 two-bedroom units, 13 one-bedroom units. There are 19 attached garages, and 5 garages are attached to the building but don't have direct access to the unit. There's a clubhouse that's being built at the entrance. So just after you come off of 116th Avenue and you're going through a gated entrance, the clubhouse will be immediately on the left or the north side. And this is for marketing purposes, and it's actually also going to be their clubhouse for entertaining or gatherings and things like that. There's no pool associated with their clubhouse. There's an exterior patio, but not a pool. The ordinance map amendment, as you can see, identifies the rezoning boundaries that we are showing. All of the areas that are identified as multifamily, they'll be zoned multifamily. If there's wetlands or floodplains or environmental features, they will be zoned either the C1 for wetlands, C2 for woodlands, FPO for floodplain, but the other areas will be zoned multifamily. And that's part of the text amendment request and the zoning map amendment request this evening, which is part of 1836 and 1837. So the Breeze Terrace PUD, which is 1837, there's a number of dimensional variations and modifications to the ordinance that are being granted for this development to occur here. And those have been actually discussed before the Plan Commission and the Board in the past, but now the ordinance is officially here for you. Residential net density to 21.1 units per acre, to allow 10 buildings on the property, to increase the number of apartment units in the building, to increase the building height to 38 feet for the larger 33-unit buildings, to reduce the setback to 40 feet, to allow that ag field fence or deer fence around the wooded area to the east, to reduce the number of required parking spaces. Our ordinance does not count the spaces behind the garage, and in this case, we are counting those spaces as well in order for him to have enough parking spaces. So there'll be garage spaces, parking behind that, as well as parking spaces adjacent and around the perimeter of the site. Additional PUD requirements and community benefits. The site is going to be entirely fenced and gated. A minimum of one parking space will be provided in an enclosed garage attached to the building. A minimum of 20 feet between buildings or greater distance as required by the code. The 19-unit buildings will have a roof pitch of 512. The windows on the west side, apartment buildings A and D that we had talked about, will be soundproofed, and basically they're using thicker double-pane windows to mitigate adjacent commercial noises from those units. All of the units will be offered at market rents. A couple other community benefits. All apartment buildings will be fully sprinklered regardless of state requirements, and the attics will be sprinklered with the NFPR 13R system. The landscaping and exterior turf shall be irrigated as identified on the plans. The on-site system for security will be according to the DSIS system that's been submitted to the village, and that system will have to be installed prior to occupancy. And then pet-free apartment units and certain entire buildings will be provided and identified. For example, buildings A, B, D, and E will be pet-free. A maximum number of one pet per unit, except within the pet-free units, the maximum weight for the pet, not to exceed 40 pounds at full growth maturity, and breeds will also be restricted, so no bull mastiff, pit bull, German shepherd, Rottweiler, or wolf dog hybrids. With respect to the land use map amendment as part of the comprehensive plan, again, we have to designate those areas that are in the primary environmental corridor under the open space designation, the field delineated wetlands are in a designation, and the 100-year floodplain are in a certain designation along with the other isolated wetlands. The multifamily area is put into that high-density residential land use designation. So this was before the Plan Commission and the board several times with different steps. This evening they are requesting three separate approvals. The first is 1835, which is an ordinance for comprehensive plan amendments as it relates to Breeze Terrace. The second is Ordinance 1836 and Ordinance 1837, which are the zoning map and text amendments. And then finally, the certified survey map, the Memorandum of Understanding, and actually the DSIS, which is part of that package, which has been reviewed by the Plan Commission. The petitioners in the audience, if you have any additional questions.
Any questions for the petitioner?
And building I in the lower right corner, that's one of the 33 unit ones with underground parking. It's adjacent to the stormwater pond. What's the approximate distance between the actual water area to where the building's going to be, where the foundation's going to be at? Is it just look closer in the picture, or is there?
I don't know without looking at the plans what the actual distance is, but I don't know if you can tell, but there's like a gray line between the building. That's a retaining wall.
Okay, so that'll.
And it's a significant retaining wall to make sure that there is a structural separation due to the gray change between where the pond is and that building.
That was my other question then. How big of a slope change and variance to the
It's pretty significant.
Water level? And is that a fence then on top of it?
Correct. There's a fence there.
Just worried about the 40-pound dogs that are going to.
Other comment or question?
I know this has been a long process, and the staff have worked hard, and there's been lots of details and other logistics to work out. So kudos to the staff and to the developer working together to get these things figured out.
During the Planning Commission, the comment was made, the people really like the garages because it gives them extra storage space. For those that are going to use their garages for storage space, does that create a problem with the number of parking spaces outside the structure?
The developer assured us that there is adequate parking. We've told them that there could be no parking on 116th Avenue, so that will be something he will need to enforce if it starts to become a problem with respect to certain tenants. You will need to find out. I don't know what their procedure is, if they have, you know, parking passes. They do not, to my knowledge, have parking numbers or assigned, so you have to park in the same spot, you know, on the south side of the building. Of course, if you have your unit and the spot behind it, that's one thing. But the parking that's behind the buildings, I don't think that there's assigned parking at that location.
there usually enough parking for tenants and guests? Is that what's taken into consideration?
It has been taken into consideration, and we've identified that for him, that there are no public streets that can be parked on, so all tenants and guests need to be parked inside. And again, if it starts to become a problem or an issue, then he will have to modify his policy with his tenants. So they have to use their garages for parking, not stuff.
Come back Black Friday, everybody's going to want to park in there.
That's why they have a gated entrance.
Mm-hmm.
Are all documents and plans in and reviewed?
We have reviewed everything. I talked to Matt Feinauer yesterday or this morning, and he said basically there's just two minor tweaks that they have to make to the plans, and I have some final documents that I need to get executed with him, and we have some just final tweaks. But for the most part, yes, we are ready to go, and we have set the pre-con. They've actually made the submittal for building permit, which we would like to get those reviewed prior to our pre-con next week.
With the gated entrance, there's the tenants will have a remote control of some sort that will slide the gate open. Or is there a gate that opens and closes?
So maybe Fran could come up and address that. I mean, I can, but we talked about some different options.
I don't hear as well as I used to, but I think the question was about the gated entry.
Give us your name and address for the record, because the poor lady transcribing this has no
clue. I understand. Fran Brzezinski, N16W23217 Stone Ridge Drive, Waukesha. Gated entry, there's two entries. One is an emergency fire entry at the request of the fire chief, and that will be gated with a padlock on it. So that is a secondary entry only for emergency. The other area, the main entry, is gated with an armed gate. So it's fenced all the way around with an armed gate.
So on a sensor? Or how does it open and close?
Well, it'll open coming out. It'll just open by sensing. But coming in, no, we'll have to have something like you would a garage door opener or something like that. Now, as Gene explained, the entry is actually to the east of the clubhouse. So the clubhouse is on the outside of it. So,
and if a police officer is responding, how would they get in?
Well, on the emergency gate, they'll have the same thing. There'll be a Knox box at each entry with either a remote to open it, or on the gated area to the south, there'll be a Knox box with a key to open it. And we're doing that at the chief's request for what he wants.
Okay.
Are you asking about the police department? How are they going to get
in? Oh, yeah, for emergency services, how they get in.
So there'll be a Knox box. There's a Knox box there, and that was at the request of the village, so that emergency, whether it's police or fire, would come in, they'll have the code, they'll be able to enter it that way. Gene, I think that's your understanding as well, right?
Yeah, but I don't think the PD can get into the Knox bus. Well, I think that's only by the fire department, right, through the engine? Or can they get in, or if they could get some type of...
I mean, we're okay with the police. I mean, the fire department has it, we're not...
You know, if there's a card like at the Recplex... If it's a swipe card like that, maybe that's something that's provided to the police department.
Whatever the police or fire department want, we'll give them.
If it's a keypad, I mean, I think that we have the design, and I think it could go either way. I think you could do the keypad the swipe.
Whatever is quicker.
Chief, you want to come up and just tell us what you prefer? Or is there no choice on this? Or? PD, Chief. Fire department has a ladder. They just put the ladder over the gate and get in. But
I think what would work best for us is either a code or a pass key. The problem with anything we have to carry is if it stays in the vehicle, it's going to cause a delay. If we have to go to a Knox box, that's really going to cause a delay. Those are really meant for larger events that we can get somebody to grab a key while we're holding a perimeter on a building. So if it's an everyday call for service, it would be much easier for us to either have a combination code to access that property, or second choice would be a card, or to have some contact with whoever called, a buzzer box like you would at an apartment building, to buzz the box and say, let us in.
Okay.
Those are three options.
Is that something that the tenants can do? Can, if somebody's visiting, can they buzz someone in?
The call and the buzzer is not a problem during regular hours, but no, that's probably is potentially is an issue at, you know, 10:30 at night. I mean, we'll have a manager, we'll have numbers, or phone numbers, but I don't know that manager will always be there. But whatever the chiefs want, you know, we're fine with that.
Fran, the technology is out there now for an app that can control that gate from every tenant, and if it was given to the police department, when that address comes up, they could also access that as well.
You know, that you're right, Mike. The technology is out there. We haven't honed in on a technology. We're not totally sold on the cloud app technology for this thing yet. We're actually sorting it out. And like our last meeting with Chief Repke, you know, we figured it out for him. We'll figure it out for the other chief.
Figure out something, please. Because if somebody's calling for a squad.
That's not a, I mean, we want them to be there fast when they come to. So we're all together on that.
And besides EMS services, if somebody's just visiting a friend, do they get buzzed in from the apartment, or does the tenant have to come down and swipe them in somehow?
They probably will have to come down. I mean, somebody will have to come down. I mean, during the day, it's a different issue. Day hours, it's different. But at night, yeah, they're going to have to arrange something with the resident. Yeah.
It's open during the day?
No, it's not open during the day, but we have on-site people there during the day to accommodate.
Okay.
Somebody needs to verify somehow.
Staff will work with Fran. I know in other, just when I was coming to the area, I was in an apartment-type situation, and it was a similar scenario where if I had somebody visit, I had to go actually down and open up the gate. I don't think this is a circumstance, or it's a frequent, it's not unheard of. But I'm sure that Fran, as he manages this, he'll think of ways to provide better service or more efficiency to his tenants. But
is this something new to your complexes, or is this something you do at all?
We typically, a project like this would not have it fully gated and fenced. I mean, you look at all the other projects, even in, you know, Pleasant Prairie, you don't have gated, fenced kind of situations. Like, so this is sort of unique in that regard. So usually it's more, well, it's a little bit unique, and we're muscling our way through it, if you will. That's probably what you talked about is probably the biggest logistical issue we have, not so much with police and fire, but mostly for residents and visitors.
Within a commercial area where this is being located, it makes sense to have it gated. I just referred to an apartment facility here in Kenosha County that also was kind of in a similar make as far as uses and was gated, and again it worked.
I move approval of the Ordinance 1835 for the Comprehensive Plan Amendment.
Second.
We have a motion and a second. Is there further discussion? Roll call vote has been requested.
Chris Keckler.
Aye.
Dave Klimisch.
Aye.
John Steinberg.
Aye.
Mike Polakoff.
Aye.
And Mike Serpy.
Aye.
Move approval of Ordinance 1836.
Second.
Do you want those together or separate?
Separate.
Okay. Motion and a second on Ordinance 1836. Further discussion? Hearing none, those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Opposed? Motion carries.
Move approval of 1837.
Second.
We have a motion and a second on Ordinance 1837. Further discussion? Hearing none, those in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries.
Move approval of the certified survey map and the DSIS system.
Second.
Motion and a second on item D. Is there further discussion? Hearing none, those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Opposed? Motion carries. Thank you, Fran. That brings us to item E, and that is to receive the Planning Commission recommendation and consider for approval resolutions 1828, a final condominium plat, development agreement, and related exhibits relating to the property located north of Main Street at 47th Avenue for the second phase of cottages at Village Green.
Mr. President, members of the board, this is the request of Mark Eberle, who is the engineer for Nielsen, Manson & Barber, as well as Doug Stonick, who is the developer and owner. And this is for resolution 18-38, and this is for the final condominium plat development agreement and related exhibits. And this is for the cottages at Village Green. It's the phase two, which includes 41 condominium units and 29 single condominium units, and which is 29 single units and 6 two-unit buildings. The conceptual plan, for some background and previous approvals, the conceptual plan for the cottages at Village Green Heights was conditionally approved by the board on April 3rd, 2017. At that time, 72 condominium units were approved, 38 single units, and 17 two-unit buildings. The preliminary condominium plat was conditionally approved by the Village Board on June 5th, 2017. And at that time, it was divided up into two phases, phase one, which is on the south end of the development, and phase two, which is on the north end of the development. Phase one, again, is really abutting Main Street, and phase two is that area north of Main Street and on either side of 98th Street. The final condominium for phase one was approved on August 21st, 2017. At that time, there were 9 single-unit buildings and 11 two-unit buildings approved with an expansion area to the north. And that project is well underway, under construction with respect to new units. The public improvements have been completed. And so they're at a point where, because of the number of reservations and the number of units that people are desiring, that they wanted to move quickly with the final plat for phase two. So this evening, the final condominium plat for phase two is being considered with 41 condominium units. The final plat is in order. Just as with the previous phase, they're considering 4 different ranch models ranging in size from 1460 to 1830 square feet, and two-story Cape Cod style units ranging from 1900 to 2200 square feet. The house units will provide for either 2 or 3 bedrooms with first floor masters, 2 or 2.5 baths, full basements, 2-car garages, and covered porches. It's still anticipated that the units will range from $270,000 to $370,000 each. They do have models open at this time for viewing. Municipal improvements, municipal sanitary sewer and water have been extended to service the initial phase one condominium units, and phase two will also include that extension of sewer and water within 98th Street, water in a portion of 46th Court to service the remainder of the development. That original stormwater basin at the southeast corner of the site is intended to service this entire development, both phases one and phase two. Construction access to the development area is intended to be 47th Avenue north into the development, as was originally proposed as part of the conceptual plan. The building of the condo units with respect to their construction activity, that will come north as well on 47th Avenue. All other local roadways within the Village Green Heights development shall be avoided, not used with heavy construction equipment. Again, this is a matter for a resolution for a final consideration of the final condominium plat for phase two. The documents are in order. We have to make copies and things like that and get all the signatures and things like that, but we are ready to continue to move forward, and we're working with their bank credit union to finalize the documents for them to close everything up. Their contractor is very anxious to get moving on their second phase to continue the work, to have it, try to get everything done this fall. That's their plan. If not, the second final lifts might carry over till next spring, depending on weather. The staff recommends approval as presented conditionally upon the staff memo.
John, I'd move approval of resolution 1828.
Second.
We have a motion, a second, for approval of 1828. Further discussion?
Is anybody moving in yet?
I'm sorry?
Are there any people moving in yet? Any units all finished?
I think we just have the models. One in. One has moved in.
Congrats.
I don't know how many units are completed. Do you want to come up for just a minute, Doug or Todd? Are both models open right now?
Not quite complete, but close.
Okay.
Doug Stonick, 3116 86th Street, Unit 101. Right now, I think we have about 12 that are in one phase or another under construction, and we're about to we're starting excavating another duplex, and we've got about two or three others right behind it. So it's moving very well. Took three more reservations over the weekend.
Good.
How many reservations in total, Doug?
We're in the mid-30s, so almost a little over halfway through.
Good. Good.
And there's 30, or there's 41 in the first phase?
31 in the first, 41 in the second.
Okay. Good. It's going to be nice.
Thank you, Doug. We had a motion and a second, correct? Yeah. No further discussion? Those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion carries. That brings us to item F, which is to receive the Planning Commission recommendation and consider for approval Ordinance 1838, a zoning text amendment to amend Chapter 420 as it relates to the Rocket Wash Merlin Muffler Martino's Dry Cleaning PUD.
Mr. President, members of the board, this is a zoning text amendment, Ordinance 18-38, and this is a request to amend or modify Chapter 420, Attachment 3, Appendix C. This is a specific development plan for the Rocket Wash, Merlin Muffler, Martino's Dry Cleaning. This has to do with their PUD. On June 11, 2018, the Plan Commission conditionally approved their site and operational plans and their conditional use permit for their properties located at 8531 and 8601 75th Street, specifically the gasoline facility building, canopy, fueling stations, underground tanks. That's all been removed, and so they're under construction with the new Rocket Wash facility. That western tenant, Merlin Muffler, that is still in place and is continuing to operate. On June 18th, the board approved their zoning text amendment, which was 1831, to create a PUD for that development. But at this time, as they continue to evaluate their signage on the site, some of their signage did not look like it was sized appropriately. It looked a little small based on the size of the site and the distance from Highway 50. And so they've asked to increase the total square footage of their signage with this PUD amendment from 150 square feet to 205 square feet. The staff does not see any objection to this, and this will allow for the installation actually of three wall signs on the three different sides. So we think that that will benefit this particular development. One on the west, one on the east, and one on the north. And then we also were correcting a couple of typos in the PUD, but the staff at the Plan Commission meeting recommended approval of the zoning text amendment, Ordinance 1838, as presented, and are requesting the Village Board to do the same.
Move approval of 1838.
Second.
We have a motion, a second for 1838. Further discussion? Hearing none, those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion carries. Item G, to receive the Planning Commission recommendation and consider a time extension of an approval of the DOT Memorandum of Understanding regarding Main Street Market Development.
Basically, we have the memorandum. We've been working with the developer. There was one minor clarification that they were seeking from DOT. Otherwise, it's ready to go. But we'll postpone it until the next meeting. But by that time, we should be ready to move forward on this MOU.
So our next meeting won't be till September 17th. So with the development agreement, we need to grant an extension at least until that night for the board to approve their MOU.
Because no, we need action to extend the deadline to the 17th, because the deadline is when it, Gene, do you remember the exact? It was a 90-day.
90 days, so it would have been sometime within this week.
Right.
So we would just want to extend the time frame pursuant to the development agreement to give ourselves a little bit more time, because we need to get some additional answers from the DOT.
And that 17th will be enough, or do we need another day or two?
Well, that's the next board meeting.
And it's a month away. That should be plenty of time.
Right. So maybe we extend it to the next day so we can get signatures till September 18th.
I don't know if we can really act on this.
Granting a time extension to September 18th for the Memorandum of Understanding with the DOT.
It
looks like we weren't able to get this thing on the public agenda.
If it's been posted, though, is this a different agenda than what was on the website?
No. This is the same agenda that's on the website.
Yeah. There's an agenda title,
agenda, but there's no.
I'm sorry?
It's item.
I know it just says
there is no content.
For a
yeah, I believe it's still
there's no content actionable. To present. Okay. It's on the agenda as item G.
Yeah. So we're just asking for an extension of time.
That's good.
And your motion again was?
The motion was to grant a time extension until September 18th.
I'll second that.
Regarding the Memorandum of Understanding with the DOT.
Motion and a second. Any further discussion? Hearing none, those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion carries. Brings us to item H, receive the Planning Commission recommendation and consider a time extension on the approval of Gateway at Lakeview Corporate Park, Declaration of Development Standards and Protective Covenants.
So this is a similar situation. They had 45 days within their developer's agreement to bring declarations to the board for approval. The village staff have provided our comments back to Wiz Park LLC, and we're basically waiting for them to provide the declaration. So we're being a little bit benevolent by extending the declaration or the time frame, but it is necessary in order to make sure that this developer's agreement proceeds forward in proper order. It would be the same. We'd be looking for the 17th, the next board meeting, so the 18th.
I move to grant the extension to September 18th.
Second.
Motion and a second for granting the extension. Further comment or question? Hearing none, those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion carries. Brings us to item I, consider and approve Ordinance 1834, amending Chapter 355 of the Municipal Code as it relates to the Well Regulation Program.
President, members of the board, this evening we have before you updates and additions to our ordinance for our Well Regulation Program. And we are required by the DNR to do well inspection on any property that has well and municipal water service in the same facility. One, we have to make sure that there's no cross connection. Two, we have to go through and check the well. So we do issue a permit. Permit is good for 5 years. We have to do an inspection. Purpose of this ordinance revision or update is to be allowed just to charge one fee of $50 for the permit and for the inspection that happens every 5 years. Our current process is you come in to do your application. It's $25. Once you pass your well sample, you have to come back into Village Hall, pay another $25 for the permit, which lasts 5 years, and it's very confusing. Current regulation, we cannot put it on the utility bill. So now as these come forward, we can do a one-time charge, $50 on the utility bill, which will include the inspection and the permit. If for some reason the inspection fails, then we charge an additional reinspection for $25 for every time that they fail. So we do believe this will streamline the process, make the residents happy, really help finance with the billing process, because now we can just put it right on their utility bill.
So moved.
We have a motion and a second on item I for ordinance 1834. Further discussion? Hearing none, those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion carries. Item J is consider and approve ordinance 1839, amending chapter 305 of the municipal code as it relates to construction and maintenance of sidewalks and driveway approaches.
President, members of the board, this evening we do bring before you an amendment to chapter 305. This year has been the year of sidewalks, and so we took a little bit of time to go through the ordinance as it stands, and we just made a couple of clarifications on there. A couple of the highlights of it, not that it's super exciting, is that we currently require anyone that works within public right-of-way to have a pre-qualification. And it's a pretty cumbersome process because it was intended for large construction projects, utility projects. Some of the smaller contractors that are more than qualified to do a work of a sidewalk repair or replacement are really kind of excluded from this just because of our pre-qualification process. So we took a little bit of time. We went through the process, and we're going to require a license instead of the whole pre-qualification process. They'll still have to be bonded. There will be a review by staff, but it'll be a much less stringent process than the large developer that comes in, hires a big contractor to do a water main or a road or something like that. This will really help out the residents that have some sidewalk that needs to be replaced. It'll really open up the door to some smaller contractors that are more than qualified to do the work. That's really the highlight of what we're hoping to improve this evening. And the details were included in your packet, and I can answer any additional questions you may have.
I move approval of 1839.
We have a motion and a second for adoption of ordinance 1839. Further discussion? Hearing none, those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? So carries. That brings us to item K, and K is to consider and approve the letter of credit reduction number 6, and this is for the cottages at Village Green.
President, members of the board, this evening we bring you for you a letter of credit reduction for public improvements for the cottages phase 1. Phase 1 is located in just to the north of Village Green subdivision. We can hit the next slide. All the public improvements are complete in phase 1, and as you're aware, we just approved the phase 2, which will be starting soon. Next slide. So left for the letter credit is $687,050.50. We estimated the amount of work that has to be complete, which is some street trees, some work in the terrace, some smaller work like that, for the amount of $138,000. We did take a retainage of the public improvements. Public improvements to date were $857,000, so we take 10% of that, hold the retainage till the warranty period is up, which is $85,000. So the total we're going to hold will be the amount of the balance to complete plus the retainage for warranty of the public improvement. So we're going to hold $224,512.32, which will leave a reduction in the letter of credit to $462,538.18. The reason for this large amount of reduction is that when we were originally held the LLC, when we were given the amount of construction costs, some of the private construction was included in the cost of the public construction, so we held it. We do not hold any warranties or any credits for the private component of it, so it's just kind of a reconciliation of it at that time, and that's why there is such a large amount at the end of the project. But staff went through, worked with the developer, and I do recommend the reduction as stated in the board packet.
I move we authorize the reduction
We have a motion and a second. Further discussion? Hearing none, those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion carries. Brings us to item L. One of our favorites is consider and approve Resolution 1826 to dispose of a surplus vehicle.
Mr. President, members of the board, for your consideration to remove from the fleet and send to auction the 2006 Dodge Durango that's no longer currently in service. So we would take that vehicle and bring it to auction like we've done with other vehicles in the past.
Move approval of Resolution 1826.
Second.
Chief, with all that washing and waxing, and I still see rust?
A lot of salt.
Okay. Motion a second. Any further discussion? Hearing none, those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Opposed? So carries. Brings us item 10, Village Board comments.
Mom's door.
Everybody getting ready for Halloween, because this is when we make our decision what day and what time.
Get ready to bone up on it. Do we have alternatives for staff?
It'll be during the day.
Okay.
Just on the sidewalks.
That's going to be a determining factor.
Move to adjourn.
Second.
Motion and a second for adjournment. Those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Opposed? Motion carries.